if you're risk averse, it frankly isn't for you. If you're if you're comfortable with a level of risk and a level of potential loss to get the benefit, then it is. I would take the view now today that I will never start another business from scratch, because honestly, it's hard work. There's a lot of time and investment that goes into it. It might work, it might not. And do I want to spend the next 2 or 3 years growing a business from zero when I could go and buy a business for pennies in the pound and start on, even if it's 100 grand of revenue?
Yeah.
You know, why start from zero if I can pay 10 grand and have 100 grand of revenue tomorrow? That's the kind of mentality I have, that I just, starting a business from zero is very hard.
Yeah.
I've done it.
This is part two of our interview with John Graves, founder and CEO of Northern Telecom. John has grown his business by sevenfold in 3 years via 13 acquisitions. If you missed last week's part one of this episode, I suggest you give that a listen first before you listen to this one. This is the Leeds Business Podcast, and I'm your host, Phil Fraser. I'm a business sounding board. Think somewhere between a business coach and a business mentor. I help business owners like you not to be lonely at the top. If you're struggling or need someone to chat to, give me a call or drop me an email. In this week's episode, John shares with us some of the good and bad acquisitions that he's done, talks us through the need to systemise his pre-packed due diligence, discusses the difficulties and processes in integrating acquisitions, and then shares with us some expert advice if you want to look into building by acquisition. To make sure you never miss out on every episode of the Leeds Business Podcast, sign up to our priority list at www.leedsbusinesspodcast.com. Everyone that signs up gets a free gift to help their business. So, let's get into what is yet another really educational interview.
You've given us a how to buy our pre-pack. Give us an example of when it's gone well.
All right.
And then we'll talk about an example of maybe it hasn't gone so well. So give us your best example.
Probably Tuple is our biggest example. So Tuple were a PLC on the stock market, on the FTSE All Share at the time. They had effectively kept raising money, did a couple of acquisitions, but they could never get it to profitability, effectively.
Okay.
And so that opportunity came up, and we jumped at the chance. They had about 1,900 customers at the time, effectively doubled us in a revenue perspective overnight, cost us 100 grand up front, and then I think three payments of 60 grand over the next 6 to 9 months. So didn't cost us a huge amount of money, but doubled the business from a revenue perspective, had a huge amount of customers, and we only ended up actually taking one member of staff in the end. So it was great from a revenue perspective. It was great from a profitability perspective. It was chaos for probably 3 months, because they'd been underfunded, understaffed and undersupported for probably 6 to 12 months. And so when we took over, we had these customers that had been ringing the support line for days and not had a response. And that wasn't a representation of the staff that were there. It was just, it had struggled over that period of time. And all of a sudden we had all these customers that were screaming at all of us, because we're like, yeah, we're the new owners. And they're like, well, this is wrong, it's not working. And we had hundreds of customers that had problems.
Right.
So it was all hands to the pump. The support guys did a sterling job of just working later, just to try to cover everything off. And Dan, who came over to us, knew everything from a technical perspective where everything was. But we got no handover. We got no, these are all the suppliers, or these are all the customers, these are all the technical installations. We just got a customer list, the old month's billing, some logins to suppliers, and that was it. And it was kind of like, so I'm there trying to deal with all the suppliers, because a lot of them hadn't been paid. So some of them were okay about it, some of them weren't. So we had to deal with all of that, as well as deal with all the onboarding and integration. And it the problem is, when you recruitment's never quick, is it? And we can all say there's a talent shortage. It's not. It's just you recruited in the wrong process. You're trying to recruit today for someone that you probably needed a month ago. Well, of course there's a talent shortage, because you're not doing it quick enough. But of course, in that one, the offer was made on a Monday. I think we completed the following Monday or Tuesday.
Right.
It's no time to recruit. And so we just had to integrate it. Thankfully, one of the customers for one of the other deals we've done was like a call answering service. So we rang them up and we're like, well, you just answer calls. We're getting swamped. We can't get the work done because the phone's not ringing. And so we changed the process and
right.
pushed all the calls to a UK call answering service for nearly a year, to be fair, just so that the customer would ring up, they take a note, it get fired into the support team via ticket, and then the team could actually manage the ticket. So we just had to change how yeah. we were dealing with stuff for a period of time. But it was a great deal, and it certainly paid for itself.
And that was, so that was what, £250,000 and what,
yeah, so we paid,
and it doubled the size of your business?
Yeah, we went from kind of 2 to 4 million overnight, right. for effectively £100,000, because the other payments came out of cash flow.
Okay.
So it wasn't like we paid the rest of the money out of my pocket.
Yeah.
We paid the initial out of cash, and then
the rest of it
funded itself.
Right.
So
okay.
Again, when you look at what we paid for it to what it gave us,
yeah.
why try and sell organically? It just doesn't make any financial sense to do.
So this prepack business must be really easy.
Well,
it must be straightforward and no problems whatsoever.
Do you know what? We've done enough for them now. I 9 times out of 10, I'd probably agree.
Okay. Tell us about the 10th one.
There's always the 10th one. We bought an IT company down in Bournemouth. We'd done the due diligence that we could. And we did the deal. So we completed that on a Friday. We'd been shown evidence, shown invoicing, that the billing was about £50,000 a month. So you're talking £600,000 a year of revenue. It was a nice deal if it had been what we'd been told. We got in there on the Friday, and all of a sudden it became very apparent that what we were told maybe wasn't quite the truth. Yes, they'd been invoicing £50,000 or £60,000 a month, but their biggest customer that equated for 80% of the revenue had left them 6 months ago, and they just hadn't stopped billing. And so, you know, it might be invoicing it.
Yeah.
But maybe we didn't.
At some point, somebody's going to pick that up, aren't they?
Maybe we didn't ask, well, are the customers paying their bills? Maybe that was a stupid question that I never thought to ask. I now ask it. But at the time, it was like, well, show us the invoicing. That was where we focused our DD. It was show us where the revenue is, show us how it's being billed, not are they paying. So all of a sudden, we had a huge black hole in the business where our staff cost alone was £20,000 a month from the staff that we 2P'd over. And all of a sudden, the revenue was only £15,000.
Okay.
And of course, that's not all profit. There's probably only 30-40% in there. So we've got this black hole of 10-12 grand a month. And
so you found this quite quickly?
Oh, on the day we did it.
Oh, right, okay.
So this was the
Friday.
This
is after you'd paid for it?
This is after we've paid. So we've paid the money. Well, we paid the first installment. There was two payments for that. We paid the first half of it on day one. The next payment was due in 6 months' time. And so as... for some reason always happens, we do a deal on the Friday, John goes on holiday on the Saturday.
That's logical, makes sense.
Every deal we've done, I seem to go away within a couple of weeks. I don't know why, I don't know, just reward myself for the holiday. But so I, all of a sudden, I'm now in Ibiza with the wife and kids. And Simon's down, who's my managing director, was down in Bournemouth. And so Monday and the Tuesday, we're kind of like, it's not good this, and payday's on the Friday. So we bought it kind of mid-month.
Yeah.
We knew we had to pay the staff on the Friday, and we're like, we're gonna have to put more money in. Like, we're gonna, like, and there's no issue putting money in, but there has to be a way or a foresight long term of getting that money back out. It's an investment.
Yeah.
And when the revenue is not what we thought it was, we were stuck because we were like, well, if we put more money in here, we're gonna have to put more money in next month and more money in the month after. It's just gonna drain money.
Yeah.
And there's no way of replacing that revenue. They've just lost that 30-40 grand a month from that customer. It's just not there.
Yeah.
And so we had to take the hard decision that the following Thursday after we did the deal, that we weren't going to put the money in to pay the staff, and we were just going to cease trading immediately. And so we had to stop that trading within kind of 4 days of buying it. So it doesn't always work out, and that one cost us a lot of money.
Yeah.
Frustratingly, one of the staff did say, I did wonder why you were buying it. Did seem a bit of a strange purchase. And I was like, why didn't I ask you?
Yeah.
Like, you'd have saved me all that money. But it's just a learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah.
The gut felt right. The revenue looked all right. The DD we'd done looked all right. We've just adapted the process, and we just ask more questions now. And we'll ask the questions in a different way about, well, you need to show us that revenue is being paid. You need to, because you can't, an administrator, before they're appointed, can't give you the customer names. They can't give you a lot of information because it's kind of confidential. Because, you know, if you're going into administration and you've just given me all your customers, well, I'm not going to buy you anymore. I'm just going to ring your customers and try and take them for free. So there's a little bit of protection there for them. And so there's only a certain amount you can do, but we just ask different questions now.
Yeah.
But that one hurt because it was, we'd gone from thinking we'd added another $600,000-$700,000 of revenue a year to the business, all recurring revenue.
Yeah.
To, well, we've just wasted $60,000. Nice one. That hurt.
Expensive lesson.
Yeah, expensive lesson. But when you work and you acquire in this murky world, I think 10 or 11 of our 15 deals have been kind of distressed and pre-pack. The reality is we can't save everyone. We can try.
Yeah.
We haven't caused the reason for it to be insolvent or distressed. And we're coming in to try and help. We're coming in to try and keep the business afloat, try and keep it moving forward, try and save jobs. But the reality is not every business can be saved.
Yeah.
And that one couldn't be. But we learned a big lesson in that meantime. It was awful for the staff because the Friday they'd been told, great, your jobs are safe, you're all secure, you're all moving over. 4 days later, they go home to, well, actually, we can't save this business. The business is too distressed. It's too messy. It's gone. Sorry, lads, you're going to get made redundant and your jobs have gone. So it was terrible for the staff. And that's not a conversation I particularly liked. I mean, it wasn't a conversation I had to have because I was in Ibiza, but but it was a decision that I had to make.
Yeah.
I still had to make that decision and we still had to deliver that back to them. And it's never a nice conversation to have. Yeah. Normally, every other one we've done is about the positivity. It's about, well, we've saved the business. We're going to move forward. This is how we're going to just kind of change it and the growth. And instead on that one, it's like, sorry. But it wasn't our fault. It was distressed. So I kind of take that comfort that we did everything we could. We were fully prepared to fund it, but it was just too far gone.
Too far gone,
I don't want to say misled because I think that's probably a misrepresentation of everything that went on.
Yeah.
But we certainly didn't get a grasp of everything in that deal that we did in all the others.
Yeah.
We missed stuff or we missed an opportunity to ask further questions. And now we just have a spreadsheet of questions and stuff that we need to know on every deal. And if we can't get answers on every single deal, we just don't do the deal.
So you've almost systemized although it's abridged, your DD. You've built that system over the years of doing all these acquisitions.
Yeah, it's never a full DD process
because
you just don't have the time, but it's certainly, there's certainly a lot of sanity check stuff that goes on. So it's not just a case of show us your invoicing over the last 6 months so that we can show the revenue.
Yeah.
There is now caveats to it. Show us how the payments are being made. Is it on direct debit? If it is, send us your direct debit statements to prove it. If it's via the bank, send us the bank statements, redact it, take all the names off, sit there and color all the names in. I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
But I need to see the revenue coming in because what I don't want to do is buy another one and be in that same situation. So I suppose it's nice to have been through both sides, having done the liquidation side now on two businesses, on the golf club and on that one, but also on the purchase side. I think that gives me a unique perspective so we can not necessarily advise the directors that are in that position, but at least I can empathise with them and kind of say, oh, well, look, this is the next step that's going to happen. You need to be prepared for this. You need to think about that. Because going into insolvency is always a challenge. It's always at risk. You know, you everything you've done over the last 2 or 3 years sometimes is going to get challenged. Every payment you've ever made might get challenged. And which happened with the golf club, there was accusations of preference payments that we'd made. And we didn't make those preference payments. They were all legitimate payments. But in an insolvency, where an administrator just wants to get paid, or a liquidator in that case wants to get paid, if there's not enough in it for him, he's going to try and find a way of getting that money.
Yeah.
The reality is he's going to come after you. So you have to understand that it's a painful process to go in. It's not a case of, oh, we'll go into liquidation, there's the keys, see you later. And it kind of was for Ensign because we'd only owned it 4 days. We hadn't assigned any supplier contracts over to us. We hadn't invoiced a customer. So, you know, you do a P&L, well, there's no cost and there's no invoicing. Well, what's in the P&L? There isn't anything. There's a balance sheet item of goodwill and there's a balance sheet item of the debt that you still need to pay to the administrator. It was probably the easiest liquidation ever. But of course, then the staff cost goes in, and there are other things that go in. So actually, when you look at that balance sheet now, once the liquidation had finished, it looked horrendous. It looked like we owed 400 grand, and on a technical basis we did, but we never traded it. But you just have to go through that process. You have to understand that it is stressful, and I think a lot of people think that you can hand the keys over and just walk away into the sunset because you've got limited liability because it's in a limited company, and it's not always the case. And it's a stressful environment to be in. It's a stressful process to go through. No one really is there to support. There isn't a helpline for directors that, oh, you know, I've just lost my business, I've lost my income, I've lost my baby, and now actually we're being challenged on a payment I made 3 years ago. There's always some stress in it. But, you know, there's good ones that are really profitable and see us, as you said, see that step change. So you're not adding incremental growth. You're going from X to Y overnight, which is great.
Just as a summary, so from, just to give the paint the picture, from a size point of view, from that first acquisition to where you are now, how have the numbers changed?
So we sit at about $7.5 million of revenue today.
Yep.
So we've kind of done 5-6 times multiple of growth,
right,
in really in the last 3 years. Although we did our first acquisition in 2018, it really is the last 3 years that we've seen that huge growth. We've gone from 10 staff to 41 staff. We've gone from one office to three offices. And that growth supports the customers. You know, if you're a customer with three or four sites in the UK, having us portioned all over the UK with engineers everywhere is a benefit. It just adds a level of service. And the customers, especially the bigger customers, have seen that benefit because all of a sudden there's more people to support them. There's more people to answer the phone. We can get to site quicker. And so our customers have gained the benefit of that growth as well. It's not just, you've grown your revenue. We've changed the way we support customers for the better.
You're a bigger, more grown-up company as well, aren't you?
We're a bigger company. We're much more grown-up. We're much more methodical and process-driven than we ever were. I think when you go back 5-6 years, it was very much kind of, well, John will do that, and John will do that, and all of a sudden, John can't do all that anymore. And that's... I always talk about growing up as a business, and I think we all have to do it. And the reality is, I think when you do it organically, that process is quite slow. Because, yes, you can recruit ahead of time, so you can say, well, we're going to need that person in 3 months, so let's do it. When you double the size of the business overnight, add 1,900 customers and only one member of staff, but you probably needed 5 or 6, you can't organically preempt that.
It chucks you into the deep end, doesn't it?
You just have to suck up and go for it. And actually, in a nice way, that's not a problem, because if you're prepared to put the work in, it's fine. I'm prepared to work 6 a.m. till midnight every day if it gives us the result that we need, because I know it's not going to be forever. And you just have to, you have to try and get ahead of the curve, but you can't, because I can't recruit next week thinking I might do a pre-pack in 3 months time, because the one I might do in 3 months time isn't distressed yet or isn't available to buy yet. And so it's always that awkwardness. But we've never approached any distressed deal with, let's buy the revenue, get rid of the staff, like strip the cost out. We've never done that. It's always about trying to maintain the business and maintain the culture that's there and add it in. It's always been about, how do we secure the staff? Of course, not all the staff always transfer. There are intricacies in 2P. That's probably another podcast, but you try and save as many jobs as you can in this process, and it's never been for us to kind of get in, strip all the cost and just add the revenue. It's always been about that growth and get the right growth.
I want to talk to our listeners and viewers about the Leeds Business Podcast Fair Deal. The Leeds Business Podcast Fair Deal has two sides to it. My side to it is, every week for free, I bring you inspirational, motivational and fascinating business owners like John. Your side of the deal has two parts to it. Part number one is, I want you to recommend this podcast to one other person you feel will get benefit from it. And part number two, I want you to post a review either on the Apple Podcast app at podchaser.com or at Spotify. Give us a thumbs up at Spotify, or if you're watching on YouTube, give us a wave to those people on YouTube, John. Give us a thumbs up and post a comment on YouTube. That's the Leeds Business Podcast Fair Deal. Fair deal?
Yeah, I think so.
There you go. John thinks it's a fair deal. So, obviously, the exciting thing is, you know, buying what looks like a potentially a business you can make lots of money off and not a lot of money. The hard work is day one. So what does your integration look like, and what should people be aware of in that integration play?
Integration's hard, isn't it? And it everything we've done has been slightly different. So like in one where there's 5 or 6 staff you buy in, the integration's kind of easier because you've got nothing needs to change operationally on day one. You know, those staff will continue to support those customers, and then you'll slowly integrate it into the wider group so that we start answering each other's calls, and then it just becomes one support team again. And so there are stuff that can take time. There are stuff that frankly needs to be done on day one. We used to rebrand everything to Northern Telecom. We bought Up Telecom in Bournemouth in 21, I think that was. And of course, in Bournemouth, saying you're Northern Telecom,
it doesn't work well, does it?
It just doesn't really work. I mean, from a service perspective, it's an irrelevance. From a product perspective, a phone line is a phone line. It's a broadband that still goes over Openreach infrastructure. It doesn't matter. But from a messaging perspective, of course, if you're sat there as a customer, I appreciate that if Northern Telecom have acquired you, you sat there going, well, they're up north and we're down south, and how does that work? And so we realised at that point we don't necessarily need to rebrand stuff. And that's a massive part of the integration, is how do we integrate? And so we've changed a lot of the messaging. It's very much powered by Northern Telecom instead of it is Northern Telecom. So we keep that as Up, and we just put underneath it powered by instead. And so we changed a lot of the mechanics of how we talk to customers and how we explain what's happened. But the integration pieces, as I said, it's varied. It'll very much depend on, is there staff to integrate, is there not? Is it just services? Is there infrastructure that we're acquiring as well? And then we just have to piece those bits together as we go. Nothing generally has to happen on day one unless there's a specific problem. Which we've never really had. It's always been about getting it integrated in the right way. And most of that is communicating with customers and suppliers, especially in the distressed side, where the suppliers are all going to be up in arms because they've probably felt the pain of that. And we've all been there as owners of businesses where a customer's gone under and not paid the bill. Yeah. So I completely empathetic to that point. But, you know, it's not my debt. I wasn't paid for it. Maybe I shouldn't be paying for it either. Not always take that view. You know, if it's critical services, Up Telecom had NHS customers, and, you know, if the services weren't paid for, the supplier was threatening to turn it off. Whether they'd actually done it or not is another matter, but they were 3 months overdue. We ended up, right, well, we'll just pay that because it's the right thing to do to keep the customers happy. There's no point in us buying a list of customers and the contracts if they all get switched off on day one. So there's a bit of a negotiation, and a lot of this is about being sensible. Like, I'm not going to pay a bill from 2 years ago. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But if it's last month's invoice and run, you know, we'll probably try and be sensible about it. But you just have to communicate really well with these with both sides. Make sure the customers are happy, because as I said, they hear the word insolvency. They hear the word administration, and we don't really try to use those words. We talk about the positives of it. We've acquired.
Yeah.
It's been moved into the group. All the positive bits. We don't sit there and go, such and such went insolvent and we bought them. Like, it just sounds terrible. So that, but they, you know, these things are out in the news. It's quite public. You can go on Company's House and see what's happened and all of that. So you have to be sensible about it. But as long as you communicate well with the customers and you engage with the staff, because the staff are all going to be nervous, because the staff sit and think, well,
who are you?
They were my boss yesterday, now you're my boss. I don't know you. You're a Scouser. And what's going to happen? Like, is my job secure? That's frankly what most of the staff care about, isn't it? Is my job going to be here tomorrow? Because they've got to pay the mortgage or the rent. They've got to feed the kids. Like, and it's a disruptive process for everyone. And you just have to engage with them and make sure that they feel comfortable. I think now we've done a lot of them, that comfort kind of comes from, well, look, this is what we do. We buy stuff that is insolvent or distressed or other people don't want. We've got a couple on at the moment where they are in distress, but equally the parent company don't want them anymore. And so they're just kind of selling them off anyway. So there's loads of different reasons why, but you just need to keep the staff happy, because if the staff are happy, the service they provide is good, and then the integrations kind of just do themselves. But if the staff are really worried, service levels drop,
Yeah.
Communication with customers drops, customers feel uneasy, and then all of a sudden the asset that you have bought, even if it is effectively pennies in the pound, becomes worthless anyway. Yeah. And so you just have to manage it. And we have a process that we follow. We have again, which has been refined over the deals of, right, well, this is how we communicate. We send letters and we send emails. The account managers will be on the phone to every customer within the first kind of 3 or 4 days of doing a deal. Just to make sure that we've introduced ourselves and they understand it, because not everyone opens the post and not everyone reads their emails. So, and of course the data we get might be our data as well. So it's trying to get on the phone to these people and just introduce yourself helps, but you just have to communicate well. But is that not business in general?
Sure. Okay. One final question then for everybody who's listening. Your business has gone through the roof through acquisition. What would you say somebody who, having heard this, thinks, oh, this is like a good deal. I might do that with my business. I might go out and acquire out of prepack or administration. What would your advice be?
Don't buy IT or telecoms because they're mine. But you can buy anything else. I think you've just got to learn it and get out and read it. I think Companies House is a wealth of knowledge. Sometimes if you know that something's gone into administration and you think, oh, that would have been nice, you can go and look at the information packs on Companies House. So you can see what it sold for. You can see how it was structured. You can see why it went insolvent. All that information is published by the IP. So if you're kind of thinking it might be something that you want to do, just find a deal that went into administration. Just search administration. It takes a few weeks, sometimes months, for that information to get published on there. But if it went into administration 3 months ago or 6 months ago, you can go and have a look, and then
you're almost using it as a case study.
Yeah, you're using it as a research tool. We do it even now. If we're looking at a deal that we're not sure how it's valued or how it should be paid for, we will go and look at previous admin deals in a similar kind of sector, like alternative networks at the moment are really struggling, and there's a couple that have been sold via prepack. And again, it's about looking at, well, how much were they? How was it paid? It's not going to say how it was valued, but you can at least kind of put stuff together and say, right, well, if that's structured like this and that's like this, then that's maybe what I need to do next. And so just use the tools that are there. Go and be nosy. Like, the amount of P&Ls and balance sheets I look at on a weekly basis for companies is huge. Even like our much bigger competitors, I'll benchmark ourselves against our management accounts that we run. Will compare us to the five top telcos in the UK because we can see their P&Ls on Companies House. So why is our gross margin this but their gross margin's that? I think it's all about financial education, and operating's one thing, but you need to get to grips with the financials. And I think a lot of small business owners struggle with that. They don't do management accounts regularly enough. They don't dig deep in their financials. They don't, like, I could tell you probably to the pound what was in every bank account that we've got. I could tell you to the pound what our revenues are, what our GPs are, what our net profits are, what every supplier invoice roughly should be every month, because I'm that close to our financials. So when you then look at a competitor that's distressed, you already know what the figures should be.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then is that an opportunity for you?
You can see where the bits are wrong.
Yeah. So is it a risk flag?
If that's the revenue, that should be the gross profit. So I know it's a profit issue, it's a margin issue, or it's a revenue issue, or it's a customer issue.
Yeah. Is it a risk factor, or is it a benefit, an opportunity? And if you know your financials that well, then you can just drop that straight into the next thing that you're looking at and go, oh, well, that's why that is, and that's why that is.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're unsure, then you're relying on other people and other people's opinion. And business ownership is about risk, isn't it? It's all about risk management. My appetite for risk is fairly aggressive.
I'd say very high.
Yeah, probably. Too high, probably. But if you're...
So it's also down to the nature of the person who's potentially thinking about doing this.
Yeah, if you're risk averse.
Have you got the appetite for this?
Yeah, if you're risk averse, it frankly isn't for you. If you're comfortable with a level of risk and a level of potential loss to get the benefit, then it is. I would take the view now today that I will never start another business from scratch, because honestly, it's hard work. There's a lot of time and investment that goes into it. It might work, it might not. And do I want to spend the next 2 or 3 years growing a business from zero when I could go and buy a business for pennies in the pound and start on, even if it's 100 grand of revenue,
yeah,
you know, why start from zero if I can pay 10 grand and have 100 grand of revenue tomorrow? That's the kind of mentality I have, that I just starting a business from zero is very hard.
Yeah.
I've done it. You know what I mean? We've all
done it.
Yeah. And but if you could go and buy, it might not be in the exactly the same sector, it might not be the exact same product, but when you've got revenue, it's much easier to produce more revenue.
Yeah.
And therefore, even non-distressed deals, there are plenty of business owners that are getting into the 60s or 70s that, do you know, those lifestyle type businesses that have paid for their living for 20, 25 years, and they're now just at a point where they just kind of want out. We had an introduction by a supplier last week to a guy who's 73, and this business only turns over 100 grand a year, so it's not a huge amount of money in the grand scheme. It's still a lot of money for some people, but it's just paid him 5 grand a month for the last 20 years, and he's been happy, and he just wanted to see the customers looked after, and he just wanted to see it continue.
Yeah.
And he's ended up passing it on to his son, which he didn't think his son was interested in, so the deal kind of didn't go ahead. But when I spoke to him, it was like, there's not a lot of revenue in it, it's not worth a huge amount of money, we'll take it on and we'll just pay you a kind of a percentage of GP for the next 3 years. Does that work for you?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah. So all of a sudden we didn't do the deal, but we were in a position where we could have added that revenue in for probably 10 grand up front. And it would have just sat there and making money. And why, if you wanted to get into that sector, would you start from zero, try and find the customers, try and support the customers, install it? It's such a hard thing to do when there is going to be so much opportunity for acquiring in the next 12 to 18 months, whether it's distressed or normal. Business is hard at the moment. Interest rates are up. If you've got any debt, it's costing you twice as much as it was a year ago. All of that adds stress and strain to business owners. And if you're at the end of your career, you're probably not going to have the desire to fight it. And maybe, I mean, I'm 36 today, so maybe I've got the energy levels to take on that stuff.
Yeah.
And therefore we just kind of crack on and focus on it. But I just would never start from zero ever again.
On that point, Jonathan, it's been absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. We could have gone on for hours and hours Thank you very much indeed.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you found it interesting, inspiring, and of use. To make sure you don't miss out on any future episodes, please subscribe to the show. Go on, do it now. Do it now before you go off and do something else. Thank you, much appreciated. Oh, and don't forget our fair deal. See you next week.